love Cam. I mean, I think it's a great move. And, you know, he's had a tough few years here with some injuries. And sounds like he's healthy and ready to go. And I think it's just a great move. Josh will, you know, really enjoy being around him. Cam loves football. He's a really unique person. I mean, he's an emotional person. I think everybody knows that. I think it comes from a great place. Everybody will enjoy it. And not just from the football standpoint, just being around Cam and knowing how he is with people and with kids and people around the community. He's just fantastic.
We asked the question, Brian. I'm not sure I got an answer from you because I'm not even sure I have an answer. Would you rather have Tom Brady or Cam Newton as your starting quarterback? What would you be looking forward to? What would you be looking forward to more? Tom Brady starting again his 700th year as the starting quarterback of the New England Patriots, or Cam Newton? God, I go back and forth, and I lean towards Newton just because of the newness and the unknown factor, but I can't blame anybody for wanting to see Tom Brady back here again for another year. And here's the other thing, Brian. Who has more question marks? And I'm not talking about your wide receivers or the talent that you have around you or your running backs or your coach or whatever. Just from a physical standpoint, who has more questions about their physical standpoint? A 43-year-old Tom Brady or a somewhat, at least broken down the last couple of years, 31-year-old Cam Newton?
Well, to that question, when I look at it, you have to say Newton's got more questions just because he's had more injuries. But I would look at Brady for the first time last year. We actually saw him. So usually we wouldn't hear about these injuries that he had during the season. And he wasn't bouncing back as quick. That tennis elbow that he had, tendonitis in his elbow, is something that lingered for the good portion of the last 8 weeks or so. Whenever he first got it, it never really got better. And that's something I would worry about if I was Brady going forward, if I was the Buccaneers, I should say, going forward, is I wonder how he's going to hold up physically. One of the things that Warren Moon mentioned a couple of weeks ago, he said that in the second half of the season, and actually Warren Moon is uniquely qualified to speak on this because he's one of the only guys that played that old.
Right.
He said in his 42-year-old season, his legs went at the end of the year, and he started to see that with Tom Brady. So I would be worried about Brady breaking down. The last five games, he was under 200 yards per game, and these injuries that, and I know he does all the right stuff off the field, but I didn't see him healing as quickly as he did in the past, and clearly that carried over onto the football field. So to answer your question in a roundabout way, Newton you'd be more worried about, but I, for the first time, I would be worried about the health of Brady as well.
From a physical standpoint, if I have to be more concerned about one or the other, I'm more concerned about Brady. I'm not saying that because, oh, he doesn't play here anymore. I'm not a typical Patriot fan. Oh, Tom Brady will never break down. He'll always be great. He'll always be the way he is at age 30. Even if he's 52 years old, he'll play that. No, it doesn't matter whether he's here or whether he's there. I had the same question marks and reservations last year. And you just said it. You started to see some cracks. You started to see some breaking down a little bit of Tom Brady. It's going to happen. It's going to. And I remember yelling at people the last couple of years. He's 42. He's 41. He's 40. He's not going to play at the same level. He's not going to have the, no matter how much stretching and water and all the crazy stuff that he does, no matter how much of that he does, he's going to break down at some point in time. His weapons, obviously, are vastly superior
sure.
to the ones that Cam Newton or Jared Stidham are going to have. But in terms of breaking, if you told me Tom Brady gets injured in week 7, I'm not shocked. I would be more surprised if Cam Newton broke down in week 6 or 7 as opposed to Tom Brady, just because of the age.
Brian Barrett, Greg Dickerson with you, the number 617-779-7937. And the other thing I would point to with that is, even if he doesn't get injured, is he the same player down the stretch run of the season? We've actually seen it with Drew Brees as well. The past couple of years, Drew Brees has not been great in the postseason. He has not been great down the stretch of the seasons. And when we see Tom Brady last year, that presented itself where he wasn't the same player. And with Brady, when you compare him with Newton and now what Brady has to face in the NFC, I believe he's up against it there because you're, and I know his weapons are significantly better, but I'm interested to see how they mesh his offense with Bruce Arians. Right. My contention would be Brady just goes in there and takes over. Quite frankly, I already think he's the GM and the head coach. I mean, he got his friend out of retirement who the coach admitted he didn't know was available to play. The GM of the team is somebody that has been, should have been fired years ago. The only reason he still has a job is now because Brady's here. Before that, it was because he could get Arians out of retirement. I mean, the guy drafted a kicker in the second round. He traded up for him. He's gone a year later. So there's a lot of responsibilities for Tom there in Tampa. But if you just look at the NFC, I believe the Saints are the better team. So that means you're going to have to win three playoff games with the Niners, who we know are loaded. The Saints, as I mentioned, are a really good team. The Seahawks have Russell Wilson, who's one of the best two quarterbacks in the NFL with Pat
Dallas.
Mahomes. Yeah, Dallas is loaded. Minnesota's got a pretty good team, despite the fact they lost Diggs. So I just feel like that road that Brady has to go through in the NFC, it's just going to be so much more difficult than what he had for all these years in the AFC. And that's not to be an indictment on what the Patriots did, but that's a really tough position to put yourself in at 43.
You know, the one thing I'll say about Brady that disappointed me the last year or two, and the one thing that I think was pretty noticeable was that Tom Brady wasn't making certain guys better. I mean, it was every great player, Jordan, Bird, Magic, whatever, they make average players above average. They make poor players average. I don't think Brady did that. Brady doesn't have to do that now, right, down in Tampa between Godwin, between Mike Evans, between Gronkowski. Why am I blanking out on the other tight end from
O.J. Howard. Cameron Brate.
He doesn't necessarily have to make a bunch of slappies into all-pro players. He's already got a bunch of all-pro quality players.
Yeah, and to your point, I think that's something going back in terms of Brady's production dipping off last year. There's only been a couple of years where he hasn't had the proper weapons around him. I'm saying the best, but say 06, the late Rashay Caldwell now, he was the leading receiver on the team. 13, he's making it to the AFC Championship game, and at one point, Matthew Slater's playing receiver against the Denver Broncos. Kembrell Thompson
started that game.
Yeah, that group of guys. And last year, who on the team actually got better in terms of the receiving core? There wasn't that element to it whatsoever. And the other thing I would ask about Brady now is, and I've been saying that Brady lost this week, and the reason I say that is Brady was clearly the number one storyline in the offseason in the NFL. And quite frankly, going into next year, he was by far the number one story in the league because he's on a new team. We know the Chiefs won the Super Bowl. Mahomes is great. That's not a big storyline there. Lamar Jackson won the MVP. We'll discuss him when he gets to the playoffs. Can he get over the hump, right? But in terms of storylines, Brady was number one on the list. But now, what's a more intriguing storyline? Cam Newton on the Patriots or Tom Brady on the Buccaneers? It was, without question, Brady was the most interesting story in the NFL. And now it's a question. And quite frankly, I believe more people nationally are going to be interested to see Cam Newton with Bill Belichick than see Tom Brady on the Buccaneers.
Yeah, it's about six. I think it's about six, one half dozen the other. It's we're still talking about Tom Brady in a different year. Well, 6 days ago, it wasn't even close. It's pretty much equal now because we're still talking about Tom Brady with a new offense. Let me ask you this, and I asked Rob and Andy this question yesterday. Do you ride out a great year with Cam Newton and say, good luck, fella, have a good time somewhere else in 2021, appreciate what you did for us in 2020, or do you try and re-sign him? Let's play out this scenario. Cam Newton's healthy, plays 16 games, tosses 4,000 yards, whatever number of touchdowns, his touchdown to interception ratio is good. He gets into the AFC Championship game. Do you throw all your eggs in the Cam Newton basket for the next 2 or 3 years? Do you give him that Randy Moss contract that Moss got after he played the 1 year with the Patriots? Do you give Cam Newton a couple of years, or do you just say, you know what? We succeeded for 1 year. Maybe we got a little lucky. He was healthy. We like Stidham. Stidham's cheaper. That's the other thing, too. Mm-hmm. If you like Stidham and he's that much cheaper, you can allocate the money that you would give Cam Newton to the three or four other guys on the team. Which way do you go?
Yeah, it's a great point because you've seen all these teams making the Super Bowl with quarterbacks on rookie contracts. But to that point in the hypothetical where Newton's great, you go, as you said, you go to the AFC Championship game. The ideal situation would be just to franchise the player and bring it back for one season.
Right.
But if it's just between long-term and get rid of him, I would give him the deal if he's playing that well, because you can't guarantee me that Stidham's going to do the same thing. Now, ideally, I'd like to just franchise him, and the Patriots have the power to do that. I believe that would be the best fit. But if he had this season where he's really, really good and the decision is let that player go and move on and go with Stidham, I would rather keep the player around, because that means your team is still competing at a really high level and still has an opportunity. And by the way, all this money comes off the books next year, as we've seen, like it's $100 million, depending on what the cap number is with coronavirus. But then you have the opportunity, maybe get him more players to go around him.
I was going to say, even then, and I think it was Andy who brought up this point, because of the salary cap situation, the COVID issue, there may not be a lot of teams next year that could go out and throw $20-plus million at Cam Newton, or at least teams that have a need for a quarterback may not have the financial wherewithal to go out and do that with Cam Newton.
So if that presents itself, you would rather sign Cam Newton too?
Yes. Yeah. If Cam Newton does all the right things this year, if he checks off all the boxes, plays great, healthy, yeah, I'm giving him the money. He's 31, 32 years old.
And, Greg, I think that's another thing where if Newton has that season, that could look bad for Brady, right? Because what was one thing that Brady, we know, was...
Well, it's awful for him.
Right?
If all of a sudden N'Keal Harry is catching 11 touchdowns and he's willing to throw him the football, you're looking at Tom Brady going, you petulant little child. God, work with the kid and throw it to him. Look what you could have done with him in his rookie year.
Well, and yeah, to that point, that was the whole thing last year, is even when the free agency presented itself, the reporting was, hey, if Brady does come back to the Patriots, it's not just about the contract. Remember that? It's about weapons as well. Ian Rapoport had it. Tommy Curran had it. He wanted weapons if he was going to come back here. So if he was complaining about the weapons he had last year, and Cam Newton comes into that same situation, and this team gets to the AFC Championship, or even they're a better offense, but they lose in the same round, the divisional round, that's going to look really, really bad for Brady, who is moping all season long in terms of what he had around him, the weapons. And it goes all the way back to the preseason, where he's flipping his helmet off because he was upset with Jacoby Myers. This is something that happened all season long. And if Newton gets these guys to, they're obviously going to play at a higher level. They, like, N'Keal Harry can't be less of a contributor than he was.
Don't say that.
I'm cursing him.
Exactly.
Yeah. But
it's possible.
But I mean, I can't imagine. Brady now, I believe, is going to be so consumed with the Patriots. He thought his ex was going to suffer for a year, right? He's like, oh, well, they got Jarrett Stidham.
Ha-ha!
Yeah.
I'm down here with Chris Godwin, and I got Mike Evans. Who the hell do you have? Jacoby Myers. Yeah. You screwed me.
He had to respond right away to that Instagram where Julian Edelman puts Newton, Massachusetts, let's work, and it's like Newton with the number one. And then Tom Brady says, I'll always be your number one. So, I mean, right away, he's got to respond to that. So I believe he's going to be completely consumed with the Patriots. Like, I guess a lot of his games are in the afternoon because they're prime time, or that 4:25 Eastern window. He's going to be looking on his phone. He's going to be trying to see what happened with the Patriots. And before that,
I don't think he'll be that. I think that Brady is so single-minded. I think that he will be so obsessed with doing with what he has to do in Tampa that the Patriot thing is, it'll be in the back of his mind, but I don't think he's going to obsess over the Patriots as much as some people think he will. I think he's going to obsess. What's the best way for Tom Brady to beat the Patriots? Is play well as quarterback and throw for 4,000 yards down in Tampa. Show them what they should have kept up in New England. To me, that's the way that Tom Brady can get back at the New England Patriots.
Sure. I just look at it as, I feel like he was going to win the divorce in the interim going to Tampa,
right, yeah,
and then being left with Jarrett Stidham. But now he may lose out on the divorce in the first year, because couldn't you see a scenario? Isn't there a scenario where the Patriots make it further than the Bucs in the postseason just based on the road the Patriots would have to travel rather than the Bucs? The division is still
But it's not the easy. I mean, you still got the Super Bowl champion in the AFC in Kansas City.
Right, but if you compare the conferences, right, so you have Kansas City, without question, the best team, then Baltimore, and then after that, there's a significant drop-off.
No, you're right. If you're balancing out the two, you're looking at NFC as the NFC is more top-heavy, certainly, than the AFC is.
Yeah, so that's why I just look at it as if you map things out, you could see the Patriots winning their division, even if they don't get one of the top two seeds, and guaranteeing themselves a spot in the divisional round, when I think Brady and company are going to have to go on the road in the first round, because that Saints team has been together for a number of years, and they have faltered in the postseason. They had a bad call a couple of years ago, but they won the division the past 3 years. So I think it's going to be really tough for them to overcome that, especially in a weird offseason for them where Brady's never played with these guys. And I could see some growing pains with that, because Brady's offense, the way he's played, Bruce Arians says no risk it, no biscuit. Like, it doesn't really match up with Brady's strengths.
And what happens, and nobody's really brought this up, what if he doesn't click? What if he doesn't click with these great weapons that he has down in and they are great weapons, the two outstanding wide receivers, a couple of very good young tight ends. What if it doesn't click? What if Brady gets in the face of Mike Evans like he's gotten in the face of other wide receivers? What if Brady gets frustrated? And can't you see Brady getting frustrated if things don't go the way that he wants them or expects them to go down in Tampa?
Yeah, because he's had a certain idea of how to play football for 20 years.
Right.
And he's been in a certain system for 20 years. And if he can't get his guys on track right away, I believe it's going to be an issue. And to your point about Evans, how about Godwin, right? He has this breakout season last year where he has 9 touchdowns, well over 1,000 receiving yards. He gives up his number for Brady. So what if Brady's friend comes in, Rob Gronkowski, and all of a sudden he's getting more targets than Chris Godwin? I'm thinking to myself, I gave up
Which is likely, by the way.
Yeah. I gave up my number for this guy, and now my numbers on the field are going to go down. Tom, I need the football. All right, a lot more to get into. The number 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett, Greg Dickerson with you up until 1 o'clock. We'll get you trending in just a second here on WEI.
Make no mistake, Tom Brady, as much as Ryan Clark and Marcus Spears are going to be watching the Patriots, so is Tom Brady.
Right.
He's going to want to know. He's going to watch every one of their darn games. And guess what he's hoping for? The same thing every Jet fan's hoping for, that they stink. So we'll find out how it goes. He can pretend that he doesn't and all that, just like I did. You know what I mean? Oh, no.
Hey.
No, I love those guys out there. Oh, bull, you want your former team to lose.
All right, that's Rex Ryan on what Tom Brady is going to be doing next year. Brian Barrett, Greg Dickerson with you. Rex Ryan, I thought he was going to be much more entertaining on TV. I got to say, like, when they first hired him at ESPN, I thought he was going to be this big mega star. I get he's on their NFL pregame show or whatever, but he doesn't really have a lot of these, like, crazy...
He tries too hard.
Yeah.
Tries too hard with his wild takes, and it doesn't seem genuine to me.
Yeah, he also said that he was going to have an issue, that he was wondering if Cam Newton was going to wear number one with the Patriots, which was kind of an issue because does that go against the Patriots culture, which I don't really understand how the number comes into a factor, like the fact that he wears number one. I don't put too much credence on that.
I'm the guy.
Yeah, like I don't see that being an issue, first of all, because like when he was in Carolina, he couldn't get number two because Jimmy Clausen was there and he wouldn't give up number two. So he picked number one. And then the other thing I would say
Jimmy Clausen, Notre Dame. Why would you ever give up your number to Cam Newton?
Yeah, I remember when that kid was coming out of high school. He's like so hyped up. His brother played in the NFL. But I just feel like we just had a quarterback here that basically marketed himself around his number, TB12.
Right. Like,
that's his business. Yes. That's what people refer to.
When was the last time you saw Tom Brady go up to the podium wearing a Patriots hat, wearing a Pat Patriot hat? That would be never.
Yeah.
That would be like maybe 2003.
Yeah,
it's always TB12.
The snowball game, that was probably the last time he wore something along those lines. So I don't understand where he comes up with the idea of the number. And look, Cam Newton is a different type of player than Tom Brady in terms of the flashiness. But Tom Brady has that same fire when he's on the field. He's still the same guy that every time he would run for a first down. And I get it. It's a lot fewer times than Cam Newton does, but every time he runs for a first down, he signals first down. He gets pumped up when they score touchdowns. So I have no issue with
that. Stuff ever bothers me. You know what it bothers me? It bothers me when Chris Canty dances when the Patriots are down 14 points and he makes a tackle after a 12-yard gain. That stuff bothers me. You want to celebrate when it's a tie game, when it's a close game, when you're up. I love that sort of stuff. I want to see that sort of stuff. I want to see that sort of emotion. I want to see that Cam Newton sort of stuff. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think that, to me, that's Cam Newton. That's who he is in a nutshell.
Yeah, and I just look at this like going forward, and I know that we've all been guilty of like buying into the hype with Cam Newton over the past week or so, but I just can't find a negative thing about this move whatsoever. Just to kind of put a bow on the conversation with Cam Newton, I can't see a negative thing about it. And when I look at this team heading into this season, you still have the best corner in the NFL in Stephon Gilmore, who you've basically built your defense around. Yep. I mean, his ability to play man coverage changes everything you can do. And I know they lost some pieces, but Belichick, whenever he loses guys, it seems like it's okay defensively. Chandler Jones goes, you have a better defense. Trey Flowers goes, and oh, guess what? You actually have the best defense in the league compared to the season prior. So I have faith the defense is going to be good. And then I believe Cam Newton's going to bring this element in terms of he's going to help the running backs. And I know that the offensive line was not great last year. I think his ability to run will help the running backs. And I believe this Patriots team right now is the third best team in the AFC after the Chiefs and the Ravens. I know there's a cluster of teams, but I have more faith that this team's going to be able to win their division, considering it's significantly easier than most other teams.
Even though we had Tom Brady for the last umpteen years, you think Josh McDaniels is just absolutely drooling over the prospect of Cam Newton being able to expand his offensive repertoire?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things, and you were on with Andy Hart yesterday. He had an article.
I was. Yeah. Good guy. Yeah. Like him. There's some other guy here, too. Brad Faux Show.
Yeah, he had an article up a couple of weeks ago about Jed Fish coming in, who knows some of these college aspects. Right. I don't think that was a coincidence. I know you're going to do some of that with Jared Stidham, but he can help out with the Cam Newton offense as well. And remember, N'Keal Harry last year, the one thing that he did do well when he was on the field is when he got the ball in his hands, he was pretty good running after the catch, and they used him in a couple of times just getting handoffs, jet sweeps or whatever. I would imagine that factors in as well.
Yeah, it was the same thing they did with from Minnesota a couple of years ago. I can't think of his name.
Oh, Cordarrelle Patterson.
Cordarrelle Patterson, yes. Yes, it's a great way to get him the football. Great way to get the ball into his hands and get him in free space.
Yeah, and when I look at it too, so with Sony Michel, that's the big question mark to me with the offense. And I know you have Rex Burkhead and these other guys, Damian Harris, right? But if I look at 2018,
who?
Damian Harris, the kid out of Alabama that they barely played.
Damian Harris.
Doesn't
sound familiar at all. Yeah. No, Damian
Harris.
Well,
I mean, going back to last year, the way that Sony Michel was struggling, I was shocked that Belichick drafted him and he didn't even give him an opportunity.
Which means that he sucked during practice. If Damian Harris couldn't play last year, that means he was an absolute abomination during practice.
Yeah, so maybe that was just the case that he sucked at practice, or Belichick's like really stubborn about his first round pick. Right. Because Belichick was going up and telling us like Michel was having this good year, and you looked at you like, what the hell is he talking about? But I believe going back to him in 20, he's coming off the foot injury, but in 2018, 4.5 yards a carry, 6 touchdowns in the postseason. I believe a lot of that was highlighted by the offensive line, right?
Yeah.
There were huge holes that probably some of the time I could have run through, right? Massive holes. The offensive line highlighted some of his strengths, and he looked better because of the O-line. Last year we saw he doesn't make a ton of guys miss. He doesn't run anybody over. But with Cam Newton, I almost feel like that's the offensive line of 2020 in terms of Newton's the guy that's going to elevate the play of Sony Michel. You look at it, when he's played with these, it's not just Christian McCaffrey. Everybody gets caught up in that. His last year he was good with Newton. But Jonathan Stewart was great. D'Angelo Williams was really good. Heck, like Mike Tolbert had a decent season with Cam Newton.
The little bowling ball?
Yeah. 3 of the past 4 years he's healthy. They are a top 5 running game in the NFL. So it's not a coincidence that Cam Newton is the quarterback for all those teams. So I believe he's going to help these running backs perform at a higher level.
If you're Bill Belichick, do you tell Cam Newton, A, play your game, be who you've been, or do you say, we got to tone things down a little bit. We got to keep you healthy. You cannot take the hits that you have taken. You have to adjust your game. And if Belichick does say that, does Cam Newton have it in him to adjust his game and not play the way that he's played his entire career in the National Football League?
I would ask him to dial it back slightly in terms of like, all right, and this actually happened to him in 18 when he got Norv Turner. Turner convinced him like, you don't have to hit a home run every play, so you don't have to hang in the pocket forever and throw it down the field or run right away. Like you can, he had over 100 pass completions to Christian McCaffrey.
I was gonna say he's gonna love James White dumping it off to James White.
All you got to do is dump it off, but it's tough for me to try to like if you try to coach that out of him, Greg. Do you lose like some of who he is?
Yeah, I think you do. I think you do.
So I mean, it's a really tough conversation. I would say, like, if you're up 30-3, don't run it. Or if you're up 30-14, don't run it as much. Just
no, but if it's
a
but if it's week three and it's a 7-7 game in
keep
the
going.
Second quarter.
Keep going.
Yeah,
here's the thing, Greg. You feel great about your backup, right? We've been hearing about Jarrett Stidham for all these weeks about how great Jarrett Stidham is. If you feel so great about your backup, why would you hold anything back with your starter? Because you feel like Jarrett Stidham can come in.
I'm not sure that you feel that great about your starting. I'm not sure you feel that great about Jarrett Stidham because you brought in Cam Newton.
So, wait, hold on. So the Patriots threw a smokescreen up there?
Yes.
Yeah. Shocker, yep. But, I mean, I can't take away the best element of his game, which is the ability to run, the threat of the run. It's almost as if, like, if you had this great pitcher in Major League Baseball that's had a bunch of injuries, right, and his curveball was his best pitch, would you be like, hey, don't throw as many curveballs as you ordinarily do?
Well, some guys only know how to play one way.
Yeah.
They only know how to play one specific type of way, and I get the sense that that's Cam Newton, that Cam Newton only knows how to play where he's just beating he's getting his body beaten up left and right. I will say that, yeah, there are times where he's got to learn, chuck it out of bounds.
Yeah, just learn how to die like Brady has done for all these years.
Right.
And Peyton Manning, to his credit, they did it. They knew when to give up on plays. And think about how many hits over the years.
Take the hit when there's a football when there's a loose football on the ground in the Super Bowl. That's when you take the hit. When it's week four, turtle. Okay, that is very simple, Cam. Very simple.
I know he's got, like, his own media stuff going on. Cam Newton does his own YouTube channel. But you think Cam Newton thought, like, that moment of his career was over? Like, I dealt with this for, like, 3 months, and then all of a sudden he's with a new team. And
no, that's the defining moment of his career.
No, I agree with you. Like, it's fair that everybody has brought it up over the past week. But if you were Cam Newton, you probably thought that moment was over, right? Like, you weren't going to be talking about that. You probably haven't talked about it in 3 years.
I don't know.
Now, do you think at his introductory press conference he's going to be asked about it?
If Shaughnessy is there is a definite potential for it to be asked. Yes. Yes.
Oh, man.
I mean, I'm trying to think.
How do you phrase it?
Yeah, I'm honestly trying to think, Brian. How do you phrase it in the middle of a press conference? I mean, I guess you can just go back and say, "Hey, Cam, you went to one Super Bowl." God, I don't even know how. I mean, without just coming out and say, "Do you regret not diving on that football?"
Yeah.
I mean, how do you? You're right. How do you bring it up 3 or 4 years later? But it is a new media faction that you're dealing with. And, of course, media around here want to dig into the negative as much as they possibly can.
Yeah, maybe like, Cam, what did you learn from the time you didn't jump on the ball in the Super Bowl, and how do you make sure it doesn't happen again?
Cam, hypothetically speaking, if you guys go to the Super Bowl this year and there's a loose football and you're 5 feet away from it, will you go and dive on it or will you stand there? Just asking.
Yeah.
Talk about it.
Worst moment, yeah, talk about it. Worst moment, J.R. Smith forgetting the score in the finals or Cam Newton not jumping on the ball?
J.R. Smith, because I'm not certain that Cam Newton's getting that football back.
Yeah. Forgetting the, well.
J.R. Smith, that was beyond just dumb.
Yeah. At least that was innocent, though, right? Like, he's just an idiot that he didn't know the score. And Cam Newton, like, you could say, okay, maybe that's a character thing, that you didn't jump on the ball. Because, what, 6-point game, 4 minutes left. If you do get back on the ball, you still get a chance. With the way Peyton Manning was playing on the side, maybe your team gets the football back for you at the end of the game, and maybe you have an opportunity to win. One thing real quickly that I'm excited about is what they look like in the red zone, because I just feel like that is such an advantage. When you get into the 5 and the 4, the 6, the Cam Newton's ability to run the football, I just feel like that's
something. I just hope to God that N'Keal Harry actually ends up being that red zone threat that we thought he could be. And by the way, stupid of so many of us to think that N'Keal Harry was going to be a bigger factor than he was in his rookie year. But now I would hope that N'Keal Harry would be one of those major targets, as you talk about, inside the red zone, inside the 10-yard line. I'm looking for N'Keal Harry all the time.
And Cam Newton has a history of throwing it up to bigger receivers.
Right.
Funchess, Benjamin, we mentioned them earlier. So that's maybe something that we'll see now with him going forward. But yeah, he's definitely going to take a step forward. And you mentioned it earlier when you referenced DK Metcalf and you think about other guys. Debo Samuel had a great rookie year. Maybe it wasn't just the player. Maybe it was the fact that the quarterback and the team wasn't invested in the player. Like, Brady wasn't going to throw him the ball, unlike Russell Wilson, who's like, I need this guy to work. And
oh, no, it was all the quarterback. It was all Brady. Brady wanted to have nothing to do with those two guys.
Nick approves of that one. All right.
Thank you, Nick.
617-779-7937, the number. So the Washington Redskins are finally considering, by the way, changing their name. I think they're going to have to. We'll get to it next right here on WEI. All right, Brian Barrett and Greg Dickerson with you.
Let's get back to some. Why don't we just do some good old Rick Pitino bashing like we were doing during the break?
I was asking you about your tenure with the Celtics and Rick Pitino.
D-bag.
Yeah.
D-bag. Oh, the worst. Oh, God, so I hated that.
What was
man.
It you were saying about the first time you met Rick Pitino? Not the first time you met him, but the first time he interacted with the media and whatnot?
Well, we had before the first game against the Bulls, he ended up bringing in like 7 or 8 of us from the. Not from the scoring crew, but from the entertainment crew. I was the PA announcer. So they bring in the PA announcer, the DJ, I think the Lucky, the mascot. They were like I said, there were like 7 or 8 of us. And he gives us this wham, bam. We need you guys. We need to have the best home court advantage in the NBA. You got to be live. We're going to get the fans going. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm there going, I'm like 25, as I said to you, and I'm like, I'm all geeked up. I'm like,
right.
This is so freaking cool. Oh, my God. I'm working for an NBA team, and I got Rick Pitino telling me how important I am. And then at some point in time after the fact, I was like, what the F? I'm like, why would you waste? You're playing Michael Jordan and the Bulls in your first game in the NBA. I know he's with the Knicks, but your first game with the Celtics, and you're gathering a bunch of nobody doofuses who play music and scream out people's names, and you're trying to get us pumped up. Work on plays. Work on your. Go talk to Walter McCarty. Don't talk to Greg Dickerson.
Well, because bringing strippers in a dorm.
Right, you didn't bring any strippers
help
in.
You get a recruit.
Yeah. If you brought strippers in, maybe I might think differently.
Yeah,
but I look back on that and I'm like, what an effing control freak that guy was. I mean, I know having been around it, these coaches know everything. So anytime Bill Belichick says. No, that's not my department. I don't know. Bull. He knows everything. He knows where everybody is buried. He knows everything. Doc Rivers knew everything. Rick Pitino had his hand and tried to know every little popcorn vendor and everything. It was unbelievable.
And I remember, too, like when he came into the NBA, he wanted to take the scheme, basically, that he had so much success with at the collegiate level with Kentucky. So he was
run, and press.
Yeah, and he's pressing with NBA guys, and it's like
they didn't want to do. They had no. We went through this stuff in college. We're getting paid now. We don't do this. This is not how it works anymore.
Well, and the other factor of that, Greg, is like, you think pressing NBA point guards is going to work?
It didn't.
Yeah,
it didn't.
Clueless. And I remember too, like the thing that one of the more defining moments in my mind of the Pitino era. There's a lot of them. But how do you give up on a guy you selected with a 3rd overall pick, a point guard, when at that time you know that point guards at that time now
Chauncey?
Yeah, it's different now where it takes them back then it took point guards sometimes a little while to develop.
But it took him. I don't necessarily blame him for that.
But first year?
Because it took forever. Well, yeah. But,
you know what I mean?
Because he was so impatient because he wanted Kenny Anderson. He wanted somebody who could play now. But in his defense, and I hate to defend the man, it took Chauncey Billups 3 different stops to become Chauncey Billups.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. I would just say, like, his rookie year, you're already giving up on the pick you made. That seemed a little crazy to me. I just always remember, too, like, when he got back to the collegiate level at Louisville, he would every so often, and I guarantee you it was every time he was on Big Monday, the Monday night game for the Big East, or he was on like that primetime Saturday window, and he had some good teams there. So, and he got the banner taken down. But anyway, when he would be on Big Monday or Saturday night primetime, every time he would wear that dumb white suit, which again, that is a scenario with a college coach where it's just like, it's all about me. It's not about the players. It's not about anybody else. That white suit. And one time he changed into it at halftime. He came back out with the white suit. I could not believe it. It pissed me off so much. Part of it maybe is when I was at school at Syracuse, Louisville used to always kick their ass. Like, they could not beat Louisville. For whatever reason, it was his press, whatever it was, they could not beat Louisville. And he would have that white suit, and it just used to piss me off.
Is he still at, is it Drexel or is it Iona?
Iona, yeah.
He got hired there.
Yeah.
And then a story, remember, I don't know, with the, I think the coronavirus basically saved Rick Pitino, because days after he signed and the story came out that he was going to Iona, there was some sort of old Pitino type story about him doing God knows whatever. Something came out and I thought, holy crap, he's going to have this job for like 3 or 4 days and he's going to get kicked out the door. But then the coronavirus thing hit and I think that kind of saved his job.
Yeah. And I remember too, like when this was all going down, when he was overseas coaching and I forget what national team he was coaching. Was it Greece?
I want to say it was Greece.
It was Greece or something, because he's coaching over there as well. But there was a story that came out before he took the Iona job that he was actually interested in getting back into the NBA.
Right.
And I was thinking to myself, what NBA team would want this guy?
There's always one stupid owner.
Yeah, true.
And there are a few stupid owners in the NBA.
Yeah, but I mean, like, he failed with the Knicks. He failed with the Celtics. And one thing he made clear, like, in the reporting, he said that he would be okay, or he would not want the basically title of president of basketball ops. He would just do the coaching. I'm like,
oh, no, that's very nice of him.
Yeah, do you think somebody would give you the job after what you did to one of the most prestigious organizations? Do you think somebody would let you pick the players after what we just saw in terms of you picking the players?
Well, I would think that there might be a team desperate out there to make a big splash, but not for Rick Pitino. Rick Pitino's days are, I mean, let's face it, he's at Iona. It makes the college basketball game better, though.
With him,
it's more enjoyable with Rick Pitino there, because then all of a sudden you got somebody to hate, you got somebody else to root against. It makes, if you're a college basketball junkie like I am, you know, you're all of a sudden going to start watching Iona games, which makes me a loser. But I'm glad he's back. I can't wait to. I want to see him epically fail.
Yeah. So as we go back through memory lane, the one thing he did do. Sorry to bring it up.
No, please.
The one thing he did do well.
Antoine Walker for three.
Yeah, well, what'd he say? Why do you shoot so many threes? Because there's no fours.
There are no fours.
Yeah. I got to tell you, like, growing up when the Celtics weren't that good, I loved watching that guy, just because at least he was entertaining, and they were bad for so many years that Antoine at least was a great character on a basketball team. Like, the shimmy was awesome, and he was really good.
He's a good leader. He's a great leader as a player.
Yeah, I remember vividly him yelling at Paul Pierce in that great epic comeback game. But I was going to say, the one good thing Pitino did is he drafted Pierce 10th overall, which is still one of the more jarring things, really. If you think about that year, remember, Pierce went back because Duncan was going to be the number one pick in 97 no matter what. So he went back and he thought, I believe the story goes, he thought he could get up to number one. And somehow you get to the draft, and he fell all the way to 10. And that was at a time when we valued what you did in college, right? And he was on one of the best programs in the country, clearly the best player on the team. And his teammate, Ray Flafrentz, went in front of him. And 9 and 10 in that draft were Dirk and Paul Pierce.
That's who they wanted. They wanted Dirk.
The Celtics
wanted Dirk.
Okay. So they wanted Dirk, and so Dirk went one ahead of him, and then Pierce was left at 10. I mean, that's a great spot to be in, though, if you're the Celtics, where it's like you're either going to get the guy you want or – somehow.
Or you're going to get Paul Pierce.
Yeah, and he had Vince Carter just recently retired. He had a much better career than Vince Carter. Vince Carter started out great, and then he kind of petered out.
He petered out when he was like 36 years old. I think the first 10 years of Vince Carter's career were outstanding.
Well, I would say his second year in the NBA was his best year. And then after that, he was really good, but he never really got... Because I feel like when he came in, you thought he was going to get to the... Like,
you thought he was going to be a Hall of Famer.
And he was going to be competing with, like, the Kobe Bryants of the world as being, like, the best player in the NBA. And it just felt like he never got to that level. And then he got to be a complete malcontent where he quit on the Raptors. I mean, there's stories he was telling the other team what the plays were. He said he wasn't going to dunk and he was just sitting out games. So I just look at Pierce as he was the second best player in that draft and you got him at number 10. So if you're going to be thankful for one thing about the Rick Pitino era, other than the speech that got you fired up, the second thing would be Paul Pierce.
You got me fired up for all of about 5 minutes, and then I just...
Then you realize, what the F is this guy doing?
I know I'm young and naive, but even I know that this is wrong. Even I know that this is stupid. Go talk to your damn players.
And then as he just tried to make it the...
And they won the game, by the way. If you remember, they ended up winning that first game of his tenure against the Bulls on opening night.
Was that the 70-win team?
Yeah, it was. That was the 97-98 team.
So Rick Pitino gets credit for one of those losses for the Chicago Bulls. Who would have thunk it all those years back? Rick Pitino did a couple of things well. He did one thing well. He drafted Paul Pierce. Other than that, it wasn't really a great tenure for Rick Pitino. All right, a lot more to get into. The number 617-779-7937. We'll get to the Redskins next because they're contemplating changing their name. They're going to have to do it.
The contemplating is over.
Yeah.
They're way past contemplating. They're changing the name.
Yeah, they're going to have to. We'll get to it next right here on WEI.